College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Nagandi.
Jalen Hurts is that dude, and we saw it prime time. The Kinnick November nightmare for really good Big Ten team strikes again. We're all bummed about Tua the person, and we're heading down the road where we're going to see if the playoff committee really values conference championships over talented rosters. So much to discuss with Kirk Herbstreit this Monday. But before we get to all of that, Herbie, I've got a couple of questions. How many tweets did you get from Mississippi State fans on Bully?
Oh man, I just looked at him and I felt bad for him. You know, it just seems like Uga has like a Superman shirt jersey on, you know, and poor Bully, he's a little smaller. He doesn't quite have the same uni. And it just occurred to me, I felt bad for him. He just doesn't quite get the same love that Uga, and I'm a dog freak.
Yes.
Like, I love dogs. And I just, you know, I looked at him. I said, man, look at my man Bully there. Just like,
it was great. It was a great segment. And RD had a lot of fun with you.
He did. He kept Carol. And by the way, I didn't even check Twitter. So I learned a long time ago, Saturday, Sunday, even Monday, stay off Twitter, stay off your mentions, you know, maybe post something and just get out of the arguments, before it gets nasty.
Good for you. Smart decision. Something I should adopt, I'm sure, on the weekends.
And
you mentioned a little bit about social media. So my next question is, what were you guys sipping on the plane during that Instagram video with Fowler and Bear? Because that looked great. I mean, first off, I love the two segments. You guys go about 30 minutes, kind of a stream of consciousness here.
Like,
this is what we're thinking. This is what we're seeing after a great game. It was good, but I wanted to take a, you know, especially with Fowler and that lime.
Fowler loves it, man. Fowler, I'm telling you, that's the highlight of the week for my man. We've done it all year. This nightcap recap that he came up with. And a lot of times, you know, we could be on the back of the bus. We could be in a car. It just depends on where we are. But yeah, he's big on Casamigos. So we're sitting in the back and, we always kind of twist Bear's arm, to get him in there. And it gets kind of feisty and you know how it is.
Yeah.
At 11, 12 o'clock or 1 o'clock in the morning. And you've been watching games all day. You know, you're just like if we put a camera in front of you, you know, you talk a little bit more candidly and kind of stir it up a little bit and kind of go get after each other. But we do that every week after the game that we call. So, yeah, we were getting into a few things last Saturday night.
Yeah, and I love some of the topics. We're going to get to a lot of those topics in a moment. If you have a question for Herbie or Pollock later on this week, go to Twitter, hashtag CFB pod, ask away. The best questions will make the podcast. Our great producer Taylor is going to sort that out. We're going to have a few questions for Herbie at the end of all of our discussion here. And let's start here. We love this game. We want to see the best players in the biggest moments shine. We're not going to have that. One of the most dynamic guys in all of college football, maybe the biggest name in college football, considering what he did a couple years ago and all the hype. Tua Tagovailoa dislocating his hip. Your first reaction, because obviously there are a lot of layers to this story, but losing him for the rest of the year, what was your first reaction?
So I was at Baylor for College Game Day, and typically we go right to the bus after game day, and we have all five TVs set up and watching all the games, so nothing really gets by you. You know, in this case, we went back to the hotel to just kind of relax and go over some notes for the game that night, and only had the one TV. So I'm kind of bouncing from one game to the next and trying to keep up with things. And my mom is, believe it or not, a bigger college football fan than me. It's probably where I get my passion for the game. So right away she texts me, Tua's hurt, you know, and that game wasn't really high on the radar when you're working through, you know, navigating one TV just because you knew it was going to be a blowout. And so I was like, what? Oh, I thought when she said that, oh, he must have tweaked his ankle. So I flipped over to ESPN and saw him down, and I'm like, what the heck's going on? And I saw him holding his face, and I didn't know if he was crying or it just wasn't registering. And I think everybody was just kind of trying to figure out. You could tell by the reaction on the field the severity of what was happening, and just like you or anybody else, I've had a chance, you know, when we travel, you get to know some of these guys as people, not just players. And I've visited with Tua over the last 2 years, you know, 15 or 20 times. And, you know, when you talk with him, I have four boys. You almost look at him like, you know, like not that he's my son, but you look at guys differently when you have boys that are, that get older. And I just a guy that's easy to pull for, you know, he would recite, you know, different Bible verses with me and just very casually, not trying to like beat you over the head, just very like nonchalantly and talk about different things. It just really warmed your heart when you left him. You're just like, man, I really love this guy, you know, not just the football player. I love the guy and started to have a build a relationship with him. And so when a player like that goes down, you obviously your heart's broken. Mm-hmm. And to see him, his face just devastated. I was just in shock. And then when you find out this, how serious it was with his hip, I just kind of took a step back just to try to absorb everything and try to talk to as many people from Alabama that I could to find out, you know, what was really going on, because they're, man, the stories started just flying around, as you know, on Saturday afternoon after that injury.
We're not here to play the blame game. We're just here to discuss some questions. And one of the relevant questions here, 3 minutes to go, up 28 in the first half, and why Tua was on the field. And while we're watching this game in the first two quarters, Jonathan Velma and Mark Sanchez in the studio with me, we're talking about why is he still in the game? And then, you know, Saban explains a little bit, and JV changed his decision on, okay, I get it. If it's about a 2 minute, you know, drill and that you're trying to put this together, my opinion was it's, if a player wants to stay in the game, that's on the player saying, I want to stay in the game. But then it's up to the coach to say, no, I have to look in your best interest to say, we're up 28. Let's just put in Mac Jones. Let's make sure you're okay, considering your history here and the ankle and the idea of protecting you long term for the Iron Bowl. What were your thoughts when you saw him still in that game in that series?
Okay, let me just back up. On College Game Day, we discussed shitty plays. We kept showing warm-ups and speculating, you know, he's out there. Maybe he will play. You know, and we all just kind of assumed the way he walked off the field against LSU, and he kind of hurried after 2 weeks, you know, after a procedure to get on the field to begin with against LSU. So I thought, my thinking out loud was, all right, they're playing Mississippi State. You have an FCS opponent. This is before the game started. Easy to say, hey, play Mac Jones this week, play him next week, gives him two more weeks to recover. Then you go into the Iron Bowl and you go to work. So I was like, what's the point in playing him today? That was my thinking. And then I end up going onto the field. You know, the injury happens. I go onto the field and there's Barrett Jones, who's calling the game on radio. And I said the same thing to him. And he said, you know, you got to remember, coach doesn't look at things like, well, it's Mississippi State. This is a good week. We can kind of rest him. Coach looks at Mississippi State the same way coach looks at LSU, or the same way coach looks at Auburn. Coach looks at Arkansas that way. Coach looks at every game that way. And furthermore, this is me thinking, he demands his team to look at every opponent the same way. So if he would have gone back and said to his team, hey guys, we're only playing Mississippi State. This is a good week. It's not that big a deal. We can easily beat these guys. Good week to rest Tua. He kind of not only would be going against his philosophy, he would be contradicting everything that he believes in to his team. And they probably are going to look around at each other like, whoa, I guess Mississippi State's not that big a deal, because Tua was cleared to play medically. Tua's parents wanted him to play. Tua wanted to play. So it wasn't as if he threw him in there against his best wishes, or the doctors are saying, hey, he's not okay. So you have to look at things through Coach Saban's eyes and how he coaches his team. And the reason they've been so good for so long is they don't have a lot of peaks and valleys. They don't have it's LSU, all hands on deck. Oh, it's just Arkansas, everybody can relax. They play the same way. They're like computers. They say they play the same way every week. And we all sit on the outside and just are impressed by teams like them and Clemson, Ohio State, and others that can do it every week. So with that being said, once he's in the game, it's easier for me to look at it and see how, of course, hindsight's 20/20. They're up 35-7. What's the point? But if you look at coach and you think, okay, his ankle is actually more stable this week than the previous week against LSU. He's been playing fine. The odds of him getting a hip dislocation, it's not really something that Nick Saban's thinking about. I don't even think he needs to try to defend himself about, well, he needed work on the 2-minute drill. The reality is he's going to finish out the first half and then he's going to go to Mac Jones to start the second half. He was just finishing out. And it wasn't like Tua was like not wanting to play. I think there's a notion or a narrative out there that Coach Saban up 35-7 is just kind of doesn't care about his players and he's forcing him out there. In reality, it's the complete opposite of that, in my opinion, and being around that program is probably as much as anybody. If you go through his optics, his thoughts on an opponent, once he's out there and the fact that the ankle was more stable against Mississippi State than it was against LSU, I'm not going to sit here and say, what in the heck's he doing? I wouldn't have played him from the word go. Like, I wouldn't have even played him in the game. But once you're playing him and he's out there executing and they're up 35-7 and things look good, it's impossible to predict that, he might get hurt on this series. So I'm not going to personally sit here and second guess the logic. I just wouldn't. The only logic I'd second guess is I personally wouldn't have played him from the beginning of the game.
And now we've got Mac Jones, as the starting quarterback as this team gets ready for Western Carolina. And of course, on the plains, the Iron Bowl in a couple weeks, and Gus is sitting there. You know, I can't think of a tougher schedule for a team throughout this season than what Gus Malzahn's gone through with Auburn, sitting at 7-3, and they may go down as the best 4-loss team in the history of college football when you look at the way that defense is set up and what they've gone through. Back to the Bama conversation, because we are going to learn a lot of things here. How should the committee before Tuesday night look at this Alabama team after that injury?
I think for now, you've got to just kind of hold them steady with who you think they can be. I don't think you can penalize Alabama until you see them play. Like, I don't think that's fair to Alabama. I don't think that's fair to Mac Jones. We've seen other years where Cardale Jones went in to a game for Ohio State and to a Big Ten championship game. And a lot of people thought, oh, Ohio State's irrelevant. They're kind of out of it. And I don't remember the scores, like 50-14 or whatever. And he had a monster game. And Ohio State looked as good, if not better, in the way they executed with the other quarterback. And so I think until you give Mac Jones a chance and this Alabama team a chance to prove who they potentially can be, I think you just kind of hold them with where you think they can be. And then let them prove themselves, or maybe they don't prove themselves when they go, to Jordan-Hare and play in that rivalry game in a couple weeks against Auburn. But I said, if you remember last week, I thought Alabama was on the outside looking in to begin with. I don't feel that this is one of those Alabama teams that's just better than everybody else. I don't think, you know, I almost always have said Bama deserves the benefit of the doubt because they are better. This is not one of those Bama defenses, in my opinion, that they've had. They're just young. It's part of the reality of losing a lot of guys early. They've had some key injuries. A guy like Dylan Moses, who was supposed to be the anchor in the middle of that defense this year. They're just playing a lot of young guys, and therefore they're not as dominant as they've been in the past. You add that with the fact that they don't have the resume that they've had in the past. And I think they're going to get caught at the end when all the data is in after the conference championship games. The fact that LSU is going to go to Atlanta, they're not going to get to the SEC championship. Like I said, in the past, you could do the eye test and just say, I don't care that they're not in Atlanta. They're better, like 2 years ago, and they won the national championship against Georgia. This is, for me, not one of those years. And that's even with Tua, because of the way they're playing defense and because they don't have the resume. So I think once a Big 12 champion is crowned, whether it be Oklahoma more than likely, or a Pac-12 champion, Utah or Oregon, I think one of those two teams will go by Alabama in the final rankings on that Sunday in December. So I think they're going to need a lot of help, but I think they're on the outside looking in, whether Tua or Mac Jones is a quarterback.
And the one thing that's working against them, too, is you're not playing at a conference championship.
Right.
I think people will make the case, well, look at Ohio State and their backup of Cardale Jones 5 years ago. Let's not forget Ohio State found a way to get in after beating Wisconsin 59-0 in the Big Ten championship. And then you get in with Cardale, and you see what happens there. But they won't get the chance to prove that Alabama.
No. But like I said, 2 years ago, they didn't have a chance to prove it. They lost to Auburn. And then Ohio State, the ball was in their court. They went out in the Big Ten championship that next week. Alabama stayed at home. They didn't play in the conference championship. It was Auburn and Georgia that year. And Georgia ended up getting revenge after losing earlier at Jordan-Hare. That time they beat him with young Jake Fromm and ended up advancing as the SEC champion into the playoff. And it came down to that fourth team. It was Ohio State as a Big Ten champion, and they did not look very good that year against Wisconsin, or Alabama, who you look at their entire resume, you could make an argument that they're not an SEC champ. They didn't even go to Atlanta. But you know what, guys? If we're all being honest, and the goal is to put the best four in, they're better. They're just better than everybody else that you're competing, you're comparing them to in this cluster. And if we're all being fair and we don't worry about two teams going from one conference, Alabama should go. That's what I felt. That's what a lot of people felt 2 years ago, and they went. That's my point is I don't feel that about this team this year. I did 2 years ago, and I just don't this year. So, if they go against Auburn and they win, you know, like Ohio State did against Wisconsin, and they win 50-0, or they blow Auburn out, obviously that would help their case. But if they don't have one of those games where we all look around at each other like, whew, mm-hmm. Man, they look great. What a closing argument. Then I really think they're on the outside looking in. It's just my opinion.
Now we're going to learn again a lot more on Tuesday night and the next couple of weeks. It's now time for the All-State Playoff Predictor segment here with Herbie. Let's see where he thinks Mayhem could strike this upcoming weekend. And remember, get better protection from Mayhem with All-State. And taking a look at the All-State Playoff Predictor, not a ton of change this week at the top. It gives Ohio State, LSU, and Clemson all more than an 80% chance to make the playoff. Alabama's next at 44%. Georgia, Oregon, Oklahoma, and Penn State fill out the 5 through 8 slots, all with the double-digit percentages to make the college football playoff. And the only other team with a higher than 1% chance to make the playoff is Utah at 8%. So the Pac-12 is obviously still in the hunt. Plenty of chances for mayhem as we get into the home stretch of the season.
This is an opportunity for me to just talk about where mayhem could change the game. Every week I'm trying to look ahead and forecast where that mayhem moment could be. Last week we talked about Minnesota going to Iowa City and taking on the Hawkeyes as the potential for mayhem. And I think we stay in the Big Ten this week, and you look across the entire landscape of college football games, it's not necessarily a great slate where you could have a ton of mayhem. But if you're a Penn State fan, you're hoping that Sean Clifford and Penn State can go on the road and try to give Ohio State a challenge. It's a potential for a exciting game. Penn State, James Franklin, typically, whether they're home or away, they give Ohio State a great challenge. So I think of all the games, that's the most logical spot for mayhem. And remember, mayhem, he could show up on your turf, so get better protected with Allstate.
And we'll be back in a minute to talk a little bit about how good this Ohio State team is right now. But first, a word from Allstate. Because mayhem on Saturdays in the fall is inevitable. Mayhem happens on the field, off the field, and in the polls. Mayhem lives on the wind, in the rain, on the foot of an errant kick, and during a trap game. You'll find mayhem in the parking lot, during tailgates, charcoal that's not totally out, an errant football through a window, a flat tire, a lost side view mirror, etc. You get the point. Allstate protects you from mayhem in the parking lot and outside it, at home and away. You can't stop mayhem from happening, but you can get better protected from it with Allstate. The potential for mayhem during the playoff race is rampant. Underdogs, trap games, unexpected weather, etc., etc., etc. Get better protected from mayhem with Allstate. Contact your local Allstate agent today. All right, back here with Kirk Herbstreit here on the College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Once again, if you have a question for Herbie or Pollock later on, go to Twitter, hashtag CFBPod, ask away. Best questions will make the podcast later on the program here. We've got a couple coming your way. Herbie, I do want to ask you, though, you brought up Penn State at the Shoe. This is not us overlooking the Nittany Lions right now. This is us talking about how complete of a team Ohio State is. Because I got to tell you, this week, I kind of wanted to put Ohio State number one over LSU just because I have some questions about LSU's defense. I have no questions about the Buckeyes right now across the board on all three phases of units on this team. They are so good. What do you see and what are you hearing about this Buckeye squad?
Well, I mean, I grew up in Ohio. My dad played at Ohio State. He was a captain, coached with Woody Hayes. I played at Ohio State. I was a captain. I followed Ohio State pretty closely, probably as close as anybody for the last 40 to 45 years. Right now, and who knows, the train could get off the track Saturday against Penn State. But up to this point, I have to really challenge myself to think about a more complete Ohio State team that I've ever seen than what I've seen this year up to this point. Ryan Day in his first year, I don't know what could be any better. Honestly, what could you possibly point out to that's been a weakness? Nothing. Quarterback play, running backs with J.K. Dobbins leading the way, the incredible depth at receiver. Meanwhile, they lost their top three or four guys last year to the NFL. They've been incredible. The offensive line has been better than it's been in years past. The decision-making from Justin Fields, the balance with Ryan Day calling the plays, run and pass, it's been lights out. And they've been efficient, protecting the ball and kind of putting a player in conflict and challenging the score almost on every play. Defensively has been the biggest change. They lost Greg Schiano. That Ryan Day decided to make a move, bring in Jeff Hafley from the San Francisco 49ers. He's a co-defensive coordinator with Greg Madison, who came over from Michigan. They lost a lot of great players, you know, last year, but they brought in enough of core group that was hungry, determined, playing with a chip on their shoulder. Chase Young now, by the way, back for the from the 2-game suspension, and they didn't miss a beat. And I know they only played Maryland and Rutgers, but man, they seem to kind of rally around. Okay, people think we can't play well without Chase Young. Man, they played as good, if not better, without Chase Young. And they're playing a different scheme. They used to be a ton of quarters coverage, which turns into man-to-man. When you play a ton of man-to-man and teams run the ball, sometimes you have your backs to the ball because you're in coverage. And they weren't very sound with their gap integrity against the run game last year. Turn on the film and watch Maryland or Purdue or Penn State or any of these games that they played a year ago, and I think the Ohio State defensive staff was scratching their head. This year they've simplified and they're playing faster, they're playing more zone, and they're dominant at the line of scrimmage with this defensive line. So things can change, but up to this point, the only reason LSU should be ahead of Ohio State is because of the resume. You have to recognize and respect the teams that they've beaten, but Ohio State, man, again, I'm going back as far as I can think. And there have been some great Ohio State teams, some great players that have gone on to win tons of championships. And this team, it remains to be seen if they will be a championship team. They're tracking that way. But I'm telling you, dude, it's the most complete Ohio State team that I can recall. I mean, the 06 team had a great run and ended up losing the national championship against Florida. But if you look at their regular season, they were dominant with Troy Smith. But this team, man, they are both sides of the ball, special teams, dominant, as good as I've seen.
And you know what? You brought up Chase Young. He comes back with 2 weeks of rest for Penn State and then Michigan. And let's stay in the Big Ten. And, you know, Minnesota, another victim of that Kinnick mystique in November. Let's just go back. 2016, Michigan rolling, they lose. 2017, Ohio State rolling, they lose. Now 2019, Minnesota rolling, they lose, all in November against, you know, Kirk Ferentz and Iowa and Vegas.
Remember the remember the Saquon Barkley game that came down to the last play of the game?
Yes.
Where Penn State went in and they somehow escaped on the last play of the game where Trace McSorley threw to Juwan Johnson for a touchdown. So yeah, it's like every year you just kind of get ready, and you're right. Vegas, everyone's like, what? Minnesota's undefeated, as Corso always says. Minnesota's undefeated. they're playing Iowa with three losses, and they're a three or whatever it was, 4-point underdog. Somebody knows something I don't know, and I'm going with the somebodies. Yeah, so that was a classic case. Vegas knows what they're talking about.
And the line was three, and you made a great point on that video with Fowler. Like, it was too good to be true, right? Where you're like, it's too good to just think that I was going to win, and then they win by 4 points. And let's play some scenarios now. If PJ Fleck's team recovers, let's just say they went out, they beat Wisconsin, and then they beat Ohio State as the Big Ten champs. Or let's just say they beat Penn State. Are they in?
They're in. I think they are. You got to pull back because it's easy to look at them. I think they're 11 right now in the AP. We'll find out Tuesday night what they end up going with the rankings. But if they recover and bounce back, that's why last week we were saying, you know, it's a big game against Iowa, but the reality is if they lose the game and beat Wisconsin, who by then will probably be a top 12, top 13 team, you knock off Wisconsin, you advance to the Big Ten championship, and let's just say if everybody wins who's supposed to win, Ohio State sitting there at number 2, undefeated, you go to Indianapolis and you beat them, and you're a Big Ten champ, there's no way Minnesota would be left out.
There's a couple of Twitter followers of mine that were going off on me on Saturday night, and I told them if Minnesota makes it into the playoff, I'll buy them drinks during the playoffs. So I'm facing that scenario now. If they went out, of course, that means get back on track and beat an Ohio State team that I think a lot of people are expecting to see in the championship of that conference. We'll be back in just a moment to talk about what was an all-time comeback for Oklahoma against Baylor. But first, a word from AT&T and Carhartt.
Yeah, college football is great unless, of course, it's just okay. Like when students decide to paint their chest with different letters to spell some word, and then they stand together to get on TV, but they're spelling the word wrong, or they lined up in the wrong order. Sure, not everybody's an English major, and I get it. We can't all win the national spelling bee. But come on, people. You should know how to spell Wildcats or Bulldogs. The purpose isn't to have a word jumble in the student section to keep your mind sharp or something. Just okay is not okay, whether it's college football fans or your wireless network. You want to watch the best college football just like you want to go with AT&T, America's best network. Don't settle for typos on people's chests, and don't settle for anything less than the best wireless network. Get the best college football and get AT&T. Best network based on GWS One Score, September 2019.
You know who works hard? Rookies! Sure, they make mistakes, but no one's got more to prove. Knowing each day's another opportunity to outwork them all and earn the respect they deserve. Point is, no one outworks a rookie. That's why after 130 years, Carhartt is still approaching each day with the passion and work ethic of a company that's 130 years young. Same hunger, same determination, same giant chip on the shoulder. And in the same way a rookie needs to work hard to earn the respect of their peers, everything Carhartt makes has to keep earning the respect of the hardworking people who wear it. That's why Carhartt still works like a rookie, and why Carhartt will keep outworking them all for the next 130 years, too. Visit Carhartt.com/CFB to learn more and shop this season's hardest working gear. Now back to the show. That gets into a big discussion of one-loss teams. And we covered Alabama. We briefly talked about the Pac-12 and their one loss. How about the one-loss Oklahoma team? And what you saw on Saturday night in the second half from Jalen Hurts. And never let the emotions get the best of them, whether it's high or low. And you witnessed it. You don't have C.D. Lamb. That was a surprise to a lot of us, you guys in the broadcast too. Like, what he did in that second half, can you put it in terms on what you've seen when it comes to performances from quarterbacks this year?
Couple things. Number one, going down to Waco and seeing what Matt Rhule has been able to do in 3 years, it's really hard to fathom. Going back to, remember, you were probably part of SportsCenter breaking news.
Oh yeah.
What's going on with Art Briles? And oh, here's another situation off the, it just wouldn't go away. That story wouldn't go away.
Yeah, is it going to be a death penalty situation like SMU? Yeah.
I mean, it was brutal. And to think Matt Rhule had a choice to go to Oregon or go to Waco, and he decides to go to Waco, and they go 1-11 in his first year. And then they go 7-6 and they were sitting there at 9-0 and they're up 28-3 on Oklahoma. Oklahoma, Baylor. I mean, that is big deal for a Baylor fan. And here comes Oklahoma, right? We showed a great shot after they were down 28-3 of Lincoln Riley pulling the entire traveling team around him. And I don't know what he said because we didn't have the mic on, but he was laying into them. And who knew that he was ready to engineer as a head coach and have his quarterback, Jalen Hurts, bring them back the greatest comeback in Oklahoma football history. And they just did it. They stuck with who they are. They just kept taking shots. They got it to 31-10, got the ball to start the second half, went down the length of the field. These were long, methodical drives. We're just so used to OU with Baker and Kyler and even this year with Jalen. It's blink of an eye. They're going to score in a minute 12, you know, a minute 15, boom, boom. And without CeeDee Lamb, they had to drive the length of the field, 12 plays, 13 plays, 14 plays. And I don't know if I've ever seen a quarterback withstand the punishment that Jalen Hurts, one thing to bring him back, but it's how he brought them back. Running the football almost 30 times, taking a pounding from those linebackers and safeties. And as I said, did not flinch, just kept coming back. Facial expression exactly the same, whether it was a fumble, you know, in the first half when he put the ball down and he fumbles it, or he fumbles at the half yard line, or he scores a touchdown, or he throws a touchdown pass. Jalen Hurts, same guy. I mean, it's the most remarkable thing to watch him. And the only time he actually showed a little bit of emotion was when he went off the field with Lincoln Riley and he jumped up and down and celebrated. I'm glad he was able to enjoy it for a second, but he was so much fun to watch. And the way that team and the defense from Oklahoma, they turned things around and got the ball back, got a few turnovers, which they hadn't done since late September. So that was a lot of fun. That was one of the more fun games I've called in a long time.
Yeah. I love how he turned around too for the kick. Like he's not paying attention.
Yeah. He's incredible. Used to being in Alabama and those kicks don't usually go their way, right?
Yeah. It was a tremendous performance. You brought up another great point about Matt Rhule. For him to make that giant leap in year three where game day is there and they are 9-0 knocking on the door and they may get another shot. They deserve another shot if they can keep it together, of course, with the rest of the schedule.
That'd be a heck of a Big 12 championship.
It would be great, right?
Oh my gosh.
You know,
but to answer your question, what to make of OU? I just said, I think it, you know, OU gets a chance to play Baylor again, more than likely in this Big 12 championship. If you're an OU fan, you want Baylor to beat Texas. You want Baylor to win out. You want Baylor in there, hopefully ranked near the top 10 again, and that's your opponent, and it helps you, and it helps your resume if you're an OU fan. And like I said, I think it's going to come down to, I think the final team, if all the teams ahead, Clemson, LSU, Ohio State were to win out, I think that final spot is going to be Alabama without Tua. If they end up beating Auburn, it's going to be Alabama without Tua and not making it to their own conference championship game. That'd be one team. OU will be potentially that other team as a Big 12 champion with Jalen Hurts and the way they came back and that type of thing. And that the resume looks pretty good. And then you have Utah or Oregon as a Pac-12 champ. I think those are going to be the three teams in that cluster that the committee will be looking at to try to figure out who should be that fourth team.
Yeah. Friday night, I hope you guys get the call and, you know, down in Santa Clara to see the Pac-12 championship, because I think they're both rooting for each other. So they can have a top 10 win on their resume. Utah, Oregon. Don't sleep on the Utes. I don't think anybody is, but everybody talks about Oregon. And as they get healthy, that Utes defense, to me, has been fantastic after that USC debacle. They've been playing really well. Can't wait to see how this plays out in the next few weeks. The other thing that we haven't talked about before we get to our fan questions is two teams that are just on track doing everything possible, and that is Clemson. Four straight week where they beat a team by at least 45 points, and Georgia. And they're doing it in different styles. Clemson with the flash and the offense. Georgia, we will out-muscle you. SEC old school style, right? With our run game and then our quarterback's going to make a couple of big throws. Well, how do you view these two teams right now while everybody focuses on the LSU Ohio State conversation?
You know, I think Georgia is a team that's not going to win any style points, but because of the way they're playing defense, it's hard not to recognize them as a team that deserves to be up where they are. And the main, I think this era of flash and dash and scoring 45 and, you know, where's the big playability? Georgia, like you said, they do it an old school way. I remember when Ohio State had 2002, they had a team that they would win every game by a touchdown or 3 points. It was close, wasn't pretty. And they ended up getting all the way to the national championship against Miami, and they ended up playing well. Well, you know, you could argue at the end there, well, the pass interference call or not. But the point is, they went toe to toe with the Miami Hurricanes in that national championship, ended up winning it. But if you looked at their regular season, there's so many people that rolled their eyes and said, ah, they're not that good. What are we doing here? Georgia's kind of that team. And if you look at the wins, they've got a couple wins to offset that embarrassing loss to South Carolina. And at the end of the day, for Georgia, it's really not a subjective analysis to break them down. What they've done at this point, knocking off Notre Dame, knocking off Florida, now they knock off Auburn on the road in a good game. They still have a chance to go to the SEC championship and play LSU. And if they beat LSU, there's no arguing with Georgia, right? I mean, it might not be pretty, but it's effective with the way they play defense, control the ball, got a great back in Swift, got a veteran quarterback in Fromm, and the receivers are making just enough plays. So, you know, that to me is, they're an interesting team, but I just love that they're not going to get caught up in a, do they deserve it or not discussion, because they've got more than likely LSU in that SEC championship game.
Clemson continues to roll as well.
Oh, they're
good,
just
good luck to the Coastal and the ACC championship game. Good luck.
I had them 2 weeks ago against NC State and got around Dabo and that team, and he made a lot of great points about how there seems to be a different way of evaluating Clemson in comparison to other teams. He feels that sometimes people have amnesia when it comes to respecting Clemson. And I agree with him. I'm not sure why a lot of people, you know, they get a close call against North Carolina and it's like, oh man, they're not that good. Or Trevor Lawrence throws a few more picks than people expected him to throw. And yeah, he's not that good. And the reality is they're actually better. Believe it or not, they're a better team right now than they were a year ago, where they finished 15-0.
Scary.
Like if it is. Now, they don't have Christian Wilkins and Farrell and that defensive line, Dexter Lawrence, but they're doing it differently. Their strength now is the back seven, the linebackers, the safeties, the corners, an abundance of leadership on that side of the ball. Offensively, they're better at quarterback with Lawrence. They're better on the offensive line. They're better at receiver. They're better in the backfield. I mean, they're a dangerous team, and I don't think people are really going to pay attention to them until we get to the playoff and they end up playing whoever they're going to play in that first round. Because nobody's going to care when they play South Carolina on the road in Columbia. Nobody's going to care when they go to Charlotte and play in the ACC championship. It's going to take them to, like I said, go all the way into the playoff until people are going to realize potentially, wow, Trevor Lawrence, Clemson. Wow, they're good.
Yeah, and their biggest challenge may be coming in practice, like we saw back in the day when those dominant U teams were there playing the second team, and the second team was filled with a bunch of studs. That may be going on right now with Clemson. And you brought up that back seven, man, Isaiah Simmons. He is a treat to watch defensively. He is no doubt.
And James Skalski at linebacker, he's a treat for me to watch. He plays with kind of a chip on his shoulder, serious focus and eyes, getting everybody lined up, getting them in the right spot. Just, you know, last year the game was taken away from him. He didn't play a snap, and I think he's just playing with a newfound respect and love, and just has a major chip on his shoulder. And I think that front seven starting to really feed off of his energy. But yeah, it's a different group. Isaiah Simmons allows him to, you know, to play almost like a 4-2-5. He's that hybrid nickel that moves up and can play up like a backer. Other times he's in man out on a player out in the slot. Other times he's in the middle of the field playing free safety. So he does everything for them. They've got really three great safeties with Kayvon Wallace and Tanner Muse and Isaiah Simmons. Just Brent Venables continuing to come up with different wrinkles and different ways of confusing offensive linemen and quarterbacks really on a weekly basis.
And you brought up an interesting discussion about Clemson, their biggest test we will see outside of the conference in the playoff, in the semis. And we've got a question kind of related to that when talking about LSU. One of our fans tweeting out, how concerned are you about the LSU defense? Because right now when they're playing teams like Ole Miss, it's fine. But when they have to face a team like Clemson or Ohio State, do you think it'll be a bigger weakness than we perceive it to be right now?
We all are looking at LSU right now, just mesmerized by their offense. It's fair to be critical of their defense. I think we're used to seeing Dave Aranda, who their defensive coordinator has been the last few years, just typically coming up with not just playmakers, but also the scheme to be an outstanding team. We've not seen that play out yet. I don't think they have the defensive line that they've had in the past. I don't think they have the linebackers that they've had in the past. I think they're very good in the secondary, but I think they've become vulnerable at times against teams that can throw it and can run it, can do both because of the line of scrimmage. And they just don't have the twitch, the quickness that you would expect from LSU. I know it's going to be an emphasis with Coach O in the future and recruiting. It's just they've missed on a few. They've had some injuries. They just have not had the playmakers that they thought they might. Linebackers are getting better, I feel like, when I watch them. I just don't think – I think they have to overcompensate for the defensive line. They have to bring pressure. They have to bring linebackers and safeties to affect the quarterback, because if they don't, quarterback's back there all day. And I don't care who you have in coverage, you know, you can get exposed, obviously. So, it's gonna be something that, you know, they're almost like the old Big 12. You know, they're gonna just be able to outscore people when they play against better opponents. They have Arkansas and, A&M, which the A&M game's Thanksgiving weekend. That's a home game, which will help. But, I don't think there's anybody that they're gonna play in the remainder of the regular season. You know, and then they get into the SEC championship against Georgia. Does Georgia have the firepower to be able to stay up with Joe Burrow? Can they create problems for Burrow in that offense? Can they create turnovers? Really, the only way I can imagine them beating LSU is to be able to create some turnovers, because I have a hard time imagining Georgia being able to score with Burrow in that LSU offense.
Let's continue the hypothetical situation here from another Twitter follower question. And last week, I think it felt like a slam dunk here with Joe Burrow and when it comes to the Heisman conversation, but he plays a scenario, Keenan. Let's just say Burrow and Hurts play in their respective conference championship games. Burrow doesn't play the best game against Georgia, end up losing. Jalen Hurts plays out of his mind and gets a win against Baylor. Who wins the Heisman?
I think there's a lot of people that have followed Jalen Hurts' story at Alabama and the way his story went down, the way he handled himself. Didn't leave. He stayed. It didn't really cause a problem. And then not only that, but he gets a chance to come in and save the day for Alabama a year ago in the SEC championship against Georgia to get them into the playoff. And I think there's a kind of a sentimental feel for him. And then he goes to Oklahoma, and the way he's performs. I mean, he leads the nation in pass efficiency. He's outstanding in the way he handles the media, kind of like a Bill Belichick or Nick Saban, you know, with the way he's just very poised and calm. So I think there's a groundswell of support for him. If he goes out and has a huge game and Burrow were to not have a big game, I think there would be a lot of people that, as you sit there and stare at your ballot, you have three lines, you have three names. You know, I think those would be the two names, that as we sit here right now, that'll be, you know, the two that you'll be juggling. And if you have a final argument where you go off, you go crazy, not to mention the game against Baylor, big stage, that was a Heisman moment, for Jalen Hurts to bring his team back and to win. And so he's right there for me. I mean, I have for years. How can I not say he's right there? So I don't know how other people would look at it, but I'd love Joe Burrow's story as well. And if Joe goes out and keeps playing the way he has, it's hard for me to imagine not putting Joe at one. Mm-hmm. But in your scenario, you're saying he kind of has an average game or not a great game, and Jalen Hurts would go off. I think potentially for a lot of people, they're going to hold on to that ballot until championship Saturday to see how things go.
I hope that, you know, the 929 voters, that it gets released on December 2nd, the ballot, and the deadline is the night. I'm with you. I think you should
lose your ballot. Yes. If you vote. The Heisman folks, they should say, okay, this percentage of people voted before the championship games. Everybody that did that is no longer a voter for the Heisman.
100% with
you. That's what I think you should do.
100% with you. Like, you don't say anything.
Exactly. How do you vote on the Heisman before all the games are played?
Drives me nuts. It drives me nuts.
I don't get it.
I don't get it either, especially on the biggest stage with so much at stake on the weekend of the conference championship game. Like, it drives me nuts. All right. Yeah. I'm glad we could discuss that. And you mentioned, too, Hurts having that Heisman moment game. He also did it without the best player on the field,
right?
CeeDee Lamb.
Yeah.
And you got to come back, right? Down 25 points on the road at Baylor, the best defense in the Big 12, and you do it without your main guy.
Yeah. Wow. And by the way, just a kind of a shout out to the rest of the Oklahoma wide receivers and tight ends, because we kept talking during that broadcast, who's going to be that guy? Who's going to step up for CeeDee Lamb? And it wasn't one guy. It was about six guys. Mm-hmm. So they all contributed in that win. And, you know, while Jalen Hurts and Lincoln Riley are going to steal most of the headlines, I thought the Oklahoma defense, Alex Grinch in that second half, and the entire group of receivers, even the running backs and tight ends, all contributed in a major way for OU to get the greatest comeback that they've had in school history.
Great questions from our followers here on Twitter. Hashtag CFB pod for Herbie or Pollock during the podcast. We'll bring it up. Before I let you go, I've got to ask one final question. Did you guys know that McAfee was going to jump in the shallow area of that lake and belly flop?
No. He is so busy with his schedule that I don't see him till Saturday, right? And he just comes into the room, just a bundle of energy. And what's great about Pat McAfee is you come into College Game Day, which is a pretty established brand with some pretty established people that have been there working together for a long time. No different than you go into a new office or you go wherever you work and you walk in the first time and it's, you know, people know each other. It's a little bit intimidating for some people to kind of walk in. He has a way of being, just being himself, mm-hmm. which is so refreshing. He did it at our seminar. They asked him to, you know, kind of be,
yep.
get everybody to come into the room, stay, say a few jokes. He's like, grabs the mic. He's like, all right, they asked me to stand down here.
Yes.
And next thing you know, you look around the room, everybody's just smiling because he's himself, right?
Yeah. And that's an intimidating room too.
Yeah. He walks in there and everyone, the people that don't know him are like, who's this guy, man? He's great, you know? And so God bless him. He comes in. He's not acting like he's just, that's who he is, right? And so I love the guy. I try to embrace him and make him feel as welcome as possible, because I love that he's authentic. I love that he's just himself. And he comes in. I had no idea. I see him Saturday. We're talking for a few minutes. What's going on? Bam, 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 bam. Next thing I know, we're on the octagon. He's got a big belt buckle on. He's doing the bear chant. You know, I'm like, oh my God, man. He's got we were in Memphis. He's doing a tiger chant, and now he's got the Baylor chant. And then he's doing, you have one light or one job. And the next thing you know, he's in the water. I'm like, what the heck is this guy? What is he doing? No, he is unbelievable. What a talented guy and a lot of fun.
It's electric, and it jumps off the screen.
Yeah.
We love it. Good stuff here. I'll see you tomorrow on SportsCenter, and then enjoy the trip to the Shoe. Going to be great for game day on the road for that environment, Ohio State, Penn State.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it, my man. Talk to you on Tuesday.
You got it. Thanks again to Herbie. Also want to thank our sponsors, AT&T, Allstate, and Carhartt. Be sure to check out our brand new podcast, ESPN Daily, hosted by Mina Kimes, Monday through Friday. Today, Mina and ESPN NFL expert Bill Barnwell discuss what transpired at Colin Kaepernick's Saturday workout. Also, ahead of tonight's game in Mexico City, what does Philip Rivers' future look like with or without the LA Chargers? Find it wherever you get your podcasts. Ahead on Wednesday, Pollock's going to join us, his reaction to the latest playoff rankings and who he has as that fourth team getting in, as well as Heather Dinich and the great Ivan Maisel. Big thanks to our producer, Taylor Schwenk. If you enjoyed this podcast and you want more, all you have to do is subscribe to the College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate it.